This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, a podcast I'm very much looking forward to because we're going to talk about a very controversial issue. The issue is GMOs, genetically modified organisms, and specifically glyphosate, also known as Roundup, which is pervasively sprayed on our crops. And there's a big controversy around Roundup. In fact, just today, I believe it was, or early this week, Monsanto, recently absorbed by Bayer, a big agribusiness company out of Germany, ran ads telling the public that nothing to worry about, glyphosate is safe. This notwithstanding a $289 million judgment that was levied against Monsanto for damages to an individual. I believe it was a groundskeeper who came down with a form of lymphoma due to exposure to glyphosate. Well, the judge thought to reduce that very, very punitive judgment, but still it runs the multi-millions of dollars. And there's a great deal of controversy about whether this stuff is toxic or not. And today we're going to talk to investigative journalist Carrie Gillum. She's written a great book. I recommend it very highly. It's entitled Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science. And she's a veteran journalist, originally just doing investigative reporting on a variety of subjects, but then got put on the agribusiness beat, which doesn't sound very interesting. I mean, you know, after a very illustrious career, but she has done yeoman service in finding the story behind the spin, uncovering both the risks and rewards of the evolving new age of agriculture. We're going to do a deep dive on that subject today. So, Carrie, really, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Congratulations also on just a wonderful piece of investigative journalism.
Thank you so much. I'm very glad to be talking to you today.
It's my pleasure. So, you know, first of all, reading your book, it says that when you originally got assigned to this agribusiness beat, you're actually sort of a proponent of GMOs. You felt that Roundup was kind of a boon to agriculture as it's pitched because, yeah, you know, we need to feed the world's population and we want to get rid of the weeds. And so tell us about your evolution on that subject.
Well, sure. I wouldn't say I was a proponent. I guess I would say I actually, you know, used it. I was a customer of Monsanto. I used Roundup quite a bit around my yard.
There's nothing like spraying it on weeds on your driveway. It's just miraculous.
Yeah, I thought it was very effective.
Yeah.
I didn't think anything at all about GMOs. You know, they had just been introduced in the mid-1990s. My world was banking. I covered the banking industry. I had been a reporter covering corporate America for a number of years. And when I was assigned to cover food and farming in 1998, you know, my first assignment was really to understand the commodities market and how wheat futures were traded. And that whole complexity about global grain trading. And, you know, from there, I started learning basically from the ground up, you know, how wheat is grown, how the rest of our core crops, corn and soybeans and canola, and then, you know, a whole array of different crops. And as I say in the book, you know, I've literally tramped through hundreds of farm fields and visited with farmers, you know, all across the country, from California to Florida, from North Dakota to Southern Texas, and spent a lot of time with scientists and regulators, and spent a lot of time inside Monsanto corporate headquarters. So, you know, it was through my education and my understanding of real life on the ground in agriculture, that there were some real dangers associated with Roundup and the other pesticides used to grow our food.
Well, you bring us up to date on the controversy, because recently, tell us about that judgment that recently was handed down against the company for essentially withholding evidence about the cancer causing potential of this this substance, and directly tracing it to the disease of one individual. But yet there are thousands of lawsuits in the pipeline, aren't there?
Yeah, there are indeed. I mean, glyphosate is what we're talking about here. This is the active ingredient in Roundup and Ranger Pro, and actually hundreds of different herbicide products that are sold around the world. Monsanto patented glyphosate in 1974 and introduced it to the marketplace. It's no longer under patent, so there are a number of companies that use it and sell herbicides with glyphosate in it. But over time, as the research grew, research followed use patterns, and as more and more of these glyphosate herbicides were being used by farmers and others around the world, it became the world's most widely used agrochemical, believe it or not. It's in our food, it's in our water, it's in our air, it's very pervasive, it's found in human urine. So scientists really began
breast milk
tracking,
as well, I understand.
Scientists, yeah, began tracking this to see what it might be doing to human health. And what has transpired is that, you know, as the evidence has built that shows that this chemical can be quite damaging to human health, Monsanto has fought very vigorously to suppress that information and harass any of the scientists who tried to sound sort of an alarm.
Hence the title of the book, Whitewash, because there's a big PR campaign. They've hired like fancy ad agencies. They hire, in effect, scientists to buttress their case, ghostwrite articles that scientists then, you know, then are placed in publications under the names of willing researchers. It's a big deal.
It's a very big and dark, part of how this company has suppressed science, manipulated science, and pressed its own propaganda. But to get back to your question, yeah. The case in California was the very first person to take Monsanto to trial on allegations that its glyphosate-based herbicides cause non-Hodgkin lymphoma, and that Monsanto has known about the risks and covered them up, failed to warn people adequately about the risks. And this gentleman, Lee Johnson, you know, it was a lengthy trial, and the jury found unanimously that he had proved his case, and they awarded him $289 million, $250 million in punitive, because they found that Monsanto had so egregiously acted to hide the evidence and was negligent in failing to warn people about this. Now, a judge did think the $250 was a little steep and cut that to $39 million in punitive, so that leaves the award at $78 million now. But Monsanto is appealing that as well. And as you mentioned,
by the way, from what I understand, you know, that may sound like a huge hit on a company, but from what I just read recently, the Bayer just acquired Monsanto, and you think, well, that would be a liability and, you know, big headache for Bayer. There's not enough aspirin at Bayer to alleviate that headache of all those lawsuits. And yet, the Monsanto division has reported profits in recent quarters, in spite of, you know, the award. So this may be just a mild dent in the multi-billion-dollar industry where more and more countries and more farmers are adopting this means of agriculture.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of a financial hit, Bayer hasn't felt it from the litigation yet. They have defense costs, of course. They did purchase Monsanto. They closed on that deal this summer. But the bigger cost to bear so far has been the decline in shareholder value, the decline in the value of their stock. Mm-hmm. Shareholders are very worried about this litigation because there are over 9,000 other plaintiffs. And if this litigation continues to go badly for Monsanto and Bayer, you're going to be talking billions of dollars in damages. And with the damages come market skepticism and real consumer fear about these products. And that's the bigger issue, I think, for Bayer and Monsanto.
And you know, I saw this as sort of a rebranding initiative because Monsanto doesn't exactly have a sterling brand. They're the makers of such things as saccharin, DDT, Agent Orange, aspartame, things that, you know, have not gone well, you know, in terms of burnishing the image of Monsanto. And when a company is absorbed by a bigger company, it, you know, there's a rebranding effort, and you know, maybe we'll be talking about Bayer, you know, with maybe a more of a halo than Monsanto has earned in the, you know, through its own perhaps over aggressive marketing of products that are unsafe.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Bayer has very vigorously been trying to defend against this and saying that they do believe that Monsanto will win on appeal. They have, however, also started hinting they might be open to settlement. Mm-hmm. I think we have a long way to go in the litigation, but what, from a journalist perspective, what's been so fascinating and fabulous about the litigation is that Monsanto has had to turn over these internal records and internal emails and documents and strategy plans. And this is what has really laid bare what I refer to as decades of deception.
It makes you kind of think of the insider with Russell Crowe, you know, like the whistleblower aspect of that movie. Where tobacco executives concealed the harms associated with smoking. It seems like, you know, the same old tune decades later.
Many people have likened this to the tobacco litigation. And Monsanto actually asked the judge to instruct the plaintiff's attorneys not to compare this to the tobacco litigation in the trial. They were very adamant about that. They did not want to be compared to the tobacco industry. Right. But ironically, one of their lead attorneys has made his fame and fortune defending the tobacco industry.
Well, there you go. I mean, he has some experience. You yourself, in reporting this story, you've become a little bit of a target. There's been efforts to discredit you, to controversialize you, although you have an impeccable journalistic career. Have you experienced pressure from corporate interests?
I had someone tell me today, one of the attorneys tell me today, they thought that I had risen to be the number one target at this point.
Wow.
But yeah, especially since my book came out, they've really ramped up the efforts to harass and suppress. And as you say, to create enough doubt around my credentials as a journalist to try to get people to keep from running my stories and to keep from reading my book. Monsanto actually filed a motion in court in this trial in last summer, asking the judge to bar my book Whitewash from being introduced as evidence.
Wow. I anticipate that with doing this podcast with you is that I don't think an area is as controversial as this area, maybe vaccines, because when I put out concerns about GMOs and glyphosate, I suddenly get people on Twitter sort of pushing back and even harassing me, calling to question my facts, my interpretation of what's going on, and trolling me, literally, because... And maybe they're paid individuals. Maybe they're just individuals who are in agribusiness. They feel very strongly that they should be allowed to spray away.
Yeah, I mean, it is part of the playbook. We know from internal Monsanto documents that they have a program they call Let Nothing Go, which is aimed at social media.
Yep.
And if they see someone, you know, making any comment at all that is negative to their product or their agenda, there are different players that will go out and then will attack and troll and harass that individual. Mm-hmm. They do it on Facebook. They do it on Twitter. They do it on, you know, a whole array of different platforms. They have different blog sites, different front groups that are set up to act as echo chambers and recirculate, you know, negative comments that they make about scientists, journalists, you know, anybody who threatens them, essentially.
Well, you know, let's take the devil's advocate agriculture, because we need to feed the world's population. Increasingly, pests and weeds reduce the productivity of farmers. And, you know, okay, maybe there's some hazards, but, you know, everything, you know, the air we breathe, the water we breathe, you know, we have to, you know, it's a risk-benefit equation. And you know, feeding the world is the priority here, you know, bringing affordable food to people's tables is really where it's at. And that's what this industry is doing. And, you know, better and better agricultural crops are being developed all the time. And, you know, we shouldn't be fearful of this technology.
Well, it's a very long and complex answer to try to give, but the bottom line is, yes, that's their number one talking point. The truth of it, though, if you look at the scientific studies, is that GMO agriculture has absolutely zero to do with feeding the world. There is not a trait that has been developed for yield to improve production. The primary GMO trait that was developed and is planted and cultivated around the world both 20 years ago and still today is the trait that encourages the use of glyphosate-based herbicides, mm-hmm. Encourages the use of the pesticide weed killers. That is not to say that there can be benefits from GMO agriculture. Certainly, they made it a lot easier for farmers to fight weeds and insects. Mother Nature has rebelled, however, and we now see weed resistance and insect resistance, and these chemicals are not working the same way that they used to. So farmers are having to try different inputs and different strategies. Mm-hmm. But it really doesn't have anything to do with feed the world. If you look at United Nations data, people are not starving, you know, in far reaches of the globe because they lack pesticides and seeds. They're starving primarily because of either political instability, economic instability, lack of, you know, proper distribution for food supplies, lack of refrigeration, roads, bridges, et cetera. It's not because of a lack of GMO agriculture.
And I think some studies suggest that productivity hasn't necessarily been increased by this technology, but what has increased is the control, the corporate control of farmers. Because on the one hand, they sell you the seeds, the Roundup resistant, you know, plant seeds, because you got to have the seeds, because otherwise the glyphosate's going to kill your crops. So you really win on both ends. You get develop the GMO crops. They have to buy from you and uniquely from you. And then you spray with the glyphosate, and it's kind of a vertically integrated monopoly.
It really is. I mean, Monsanto introduced their Roundup Ready crops right as their patent on these glyphosate-based Roundup herbicides was expiring, and they were losing the patent, and they wanted to figure out a way to keep control of the market and market share. And so they introduced Roundup Ready crops and marketed them as to be used with its Roundup herbicide. And it was a brilliant strategy, and it worked very well for them. And their market share and volume sales increased, and investors rewarded them. And they, you know, it was a billion-dollar baby for them for many, many years.
And, you know, as you mentioned earlier, glyphosate resistance has emerged because, you know, we in the medical field, we know about this because with these great new antibiotics that wipe out everything, eventually the bacteria mutate and become resistant. And then we have antibiotic resistance, and then nothing works, and we have to keep coming up with new antibiotics. What happens with the farmers is they end up, you know, an unintended consequence, they end up dousing their fields with much higher levels of glyphosate and even using other unsafe herbicides that they previously didn't have to use because the glyphosate's not working anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big point. irrespective of whether or not there's human health risks associated with this, environmentally it just isn't working like it used to because of the overuse. And farmers, as you said, now are using dicamba and 2,4-D on new GMO dicamba and 2,4-D tolerant crops and combining that in many cases with glyphosate. They're on a vicious treadmill that is pesticide dependent. And most farmers recognize that they have to get off of this treadmill. They're just not quite sure how at this point.
Okay. Well, okay, this is a good point at which to pause because we have a lot more to talk about on this subject. The book is Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science. You know, they say that, science shouldn't be political, that it shouldn't be harnessed to a corporate interest. Science is the truth with a capital T, but sometimes science can be perverted in an effort to promote a technology, and that's clearly what's happening with glyphosate and some of these GMO crops. With us, the author of Whitewash, Carrie Gillam, G-I-L-L-A-M. I recommend the book very highly because it's suspenseful. It's about this pervasive cover-up. And you can become more informed on it by getting it. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.